comes forward, where it can be affected by suggestion. Being hypnotized is actually a process of work. It's like learning anything. Our basic fundamentals, even hypnosis. To be hypnotized, there are three things that you must do. Number one is you must relax. Forget about everything and everyone. Completely ignore your surroundings. There are only two people that I want you to
win. And win big in the country music format, you need Digital Country.
We spotlight the hottest and best tech young artists. Changing the face of country music today, like Garth Brooks.
What I want you to do, and the way of relaxing, is to use what I call visual imagery. You probably know it better by the name imagination. I want you to imagine just as vividly as you can. Every muscle in your body is just as limp as a rag. And your whole body is just like a big old-fashioned rag doll. Completely limp. Number two, I want you to follow instructions. Do exactly as I instruct you to do. Do not reason as to why I do something. Simply do it. There is a reason behind this. In other words, follow my instructions to the very letter. Number three. This is the most important thing of all. As I have said, hypnosis is not a state of sleep. It is a state of concentration. So I'm going to ask you to narrow your field of concentration down to just one thing. That is the sound. I realize you will be aware of sounds around you.
And these could distract you.
They could cause your mind to wander,
cause you to daydream.
If you find this happening to yourself immediately, by your own sheer willpower, force your mind back to my voice. Literally hang on to every word that I say,
as though your life depended on it.
If you can do these
three things, there is no reason why you should not be a very good hypnotist.
Anyone of average intelligence
can be hypnotized quite easily.
The higher your IQ, the stronger your point of concentration. And the better sleep. In a moment, I'm going to have you stare into a light. But first, I want you to sit in a comfortable chair. Sit very erect, with your feet not on the floor. Place your hands in your lap. Turn the palms of your hands up. Now, if for any reason you should not hear this recording to the very end, either due to machine or recording failure, or if an emergency should arise, you will immediately open your eyes, being wide awake and fully refreshed. Now remember that.
All right. Here we go.
And this is my...
this moment on, I want you to stare.
Good luck. Stare very deeply and very intently.
Intent.
Do not remove your eyes from the light for any reason. Do not glance away.
Even for the slightest second.
Just keep staring very deeply. Keep staring very deeply. It'll be dear of me.
Ring very deeply.
And very intensely.
Listen to our voices, though. Are actually trying to memorize every word
that I say.
Very deep into the light, listen to my voice. Muscle in your body completely relaxed. Always staring at the light, listening to my voice, and relaxing every single.
want you to take a deep breath. Take a deep breath.
Hold it.
Good luck. Hold it.
Hold it.
Hold it.
Hold it. Hold it.
Good luck.
Hold it. Hold it. Hold it. Hold it. Hold it.
Hold it.
Now let it out real slow. As you do, just let yourself sit down. Every muscle in your body relaxing. Every muscle just as limp as a rug. Always stirring at the voice. Listening to my voice.
And relaxing every single muscle. Now take another deep breath. Take a deep breath. Hold it. Hold it. Good luck. Hold it.
Hold it. Hold it.
Hold it. Hold it. Now let it out reels.
Weird.
No.
What reels?
That's still
pretty.
Oh, and by the way, in the wolf chase scene, I'm being nice to us. I'm Simon.
Hold it.
Yes, okay.
Now let it out real slow. As it is, just let it real slow. Real slow. Real slow. Real slow. Real slow. As it is, just let it real slow.
Violent discussion. They are going to butt heads with each other because each is insistent. Two. To finish. Close. This memorandum will serve to button up the issue.
what's on the Disney Channel.
No, that's one. I like their movies.
The Teeny Princess, 1977, stars Margaret Singh, Albert Fraff, and George Doolin, that's Lapo. Not one of the more popular productions of the Disney studio, but it's, I don't know, it's an hour and a half, and they have the special extra tacked onto it, showing how they made the movie, the secret of Chocolate Fudge Castle, and the whole thing. It's quite a hefty squirt from the Disney organization, all the way from
the war and
secret cave in the Presidio.
Gorgeous, right?
Sunk
the Empire strikes back.
You know, they're on strike, I understand.
Now, I am not pointing fingers.
My fingers are
63.
I don't want to talk over that.
Oh my God.
I'm
sorry.
Careful.
Bye.
You look really familiar.
Jeez.
I'm sorry. Do I know you from somewhere?
You know what? Actually, you look really familiar. Are you the girl that's in those dog food commercials?
Yeah.
Dr. Ross.
Chief, how's your coffee here?
Bad.
Let's get some. Every time I see one of those commercials, I have this fantasy that I'll be out and I'm walking and I see you and you got that little Pomeranian from the commercial.
All right, let's keep this clean here.
This is Juan Sanchez.
I grab you and I just give you the most intense...
Yeah, a little Pomeranian, sure. You know, I've heard them all.
All day long, really one sends and cares for the finest hedgehogs
of all the plants.
The little Pomeranian, that's kind of low, don't you think? Man, speciesist. And...
Oh.
Haywood, just had word that our spaceship Leonov will be ready to leave for Jupiter in 3 months.
Jumping Jupiter.
Never got me.
Sizzling jets.
I don't care if I never go.
See,
to
the
bed.
Aliens put on these shows, and they sing and dance there.
And dance matters.
If only people could see, they'd realize they're
friendly aliens.
Yeah, they're just like you and me.
What if they killed Cy Sperling?
The radio version.
Yeah,
that was an accident. Everybody knows, or everybody should know, that was an accident. He guaranteed it.
Hi, kids.
Every race, color, religion,
every little bug needs a honey to hug.
Why we're religioning now.
Because the gospel hour
is. That's
why
I was thinking about it, because St. Stupid Day is coming up.
Not
seems
for
like
a while.
It's just tomorrow.
It's not tomorrow. A great deal of things have to happen before that can take place.
And Facebook and Hunter. One's just plain to pick his extraordinary good beans.
And are there big plans for St. Stupid's Day this year?
Oh, big plans.
They're going to have the flaming chariot?
Yeah, and the palanquin with Bishop Giuliana carried by co-eds from UC Berkeley.
Well, that sounds good. What about the parade route?
I don't know if anybody's been able to ever figure that out.
They're not going to change the motorcade route for this.
No, I thought you meant the root cause of why they.
The root cause of violence and disaffection.
During the parade.
During the burning of the life-size audio animatronic figure of Bishop Joey, which screams and struggles realistically.
And expensive, too. so sad. But I'm sure Bishop Joey will be here to tout his so-called religion before then.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have a special show. We're featuring the entire history of the First Church of the Last Laugh. With a film
take notes, kid. Clip. There'll be a quiz.
That's right.
And this, stay awake.
These are some of the earliest 8mm films. Of the.
Oh, you know what I saw at the White Elephant Sale was a whole wad of Black Hawk films, including Liberation of Guam and Invasion of Truk.
In 16?
U.S. Navy Air Force. Air for air, air arm history.
Air
no,
something.
In regular old age.
Oh.
And I thought about it, and then I realized, yeah, I could take them to Costco and have them transferred. So maybe I'll go back. And they were gone.
Someone had already
bought the
them.
Same thing. I've got a bunch of Liberation of Guam.
Do that at Costco, huh?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they do 8. I know they do Super 8. I don't think they do 16, weirdly enough. Because I don't know if there's enough out there to. 16mm was the sine qua non amateur shooting, film shooting back in the 40s, 50s, 60s.
Well, that's before they developed Standard 8 and Super 8.
Then they cut 16 in half and made Standard 8. And then they made this new thing called Super 8. And right now at the White Elephant Sale, you can get 8 and Super 8 editors.
But how about a projector?
They had some of those, I think. They didn't have a 16, but they did have one Super 8. They're fading fast. The problem is, where do you get a bulb nowadays? And there's no call for projector. Nobody runs movies through projectors anymore because projectors ruin your film. Not only the claw tearing up the holes, but the actual exposure of light to the frames. Each time you do that, it takes a little bit away from the frame. So it's a lot better just to do digitize them and move them into files where you can start messing with them. Because projectors are bad things. They were always bad. They just happened to be the only way you could do it back then. But now, oh, we're all better now. We're working on, you can hear the construction crews right now working on the show in the background there. Steam fitting, laying posts and pipes.
Yeah, there's a whole series of brawny construction workers are hammering on the outside. You can hear them.
Those are just the women.
Yeah.
How long is the line for the Star Wars thing at Disneyland?
I've never been on it.
I know, but Rob's probably
on it. Oh, A-Rob was there.
Can you, is it doable?
There's two lines you can get into.
One is the reserve line, kind of?
No, one is like a like
VIP
a,
like line.
A, like a standalone line.
You have to stand 6 feet each person.
Back off, man.
I've got my Star
You
Wars
and your rascal, line. Yes.
I thought you got on your phone and you would reserve, sort of, so that you didn't have to stand.
No, they don't really have that kind of thing. But but what you do is that you could go on the standby line and just ride the ride or get on the, like, in the Millennium Falcon set. You know, it's kind of fun to be in.
And how many people get on it with you?
5 other people.
I mean, on the Millennium Falcon, you got 500 people on
5
board?
Other people.
Oh, 5.
500 people come, your whole family. Yeah, if you can't get on the ride without family members still alive, Disney checks. You must wear your underpants on the outside, Disney checks.
That sounds like Salt Lake City.
Oh, the miracle.
Yeah, the miracle of Jesus underpants.
Bing! Clean.
Bulletproof. Fireproof. Sinproof.
Sinproof, yeah.
Dr. Sin, alias this character.
So the standby line is nice because you could just be like, hey, I can get in to the main kind of area in about 5 minutes.
Stand by, please.
But if you want to, like, be a pilot, you gotta get in the other longer line.
Don't you? And have that's to go like to a that's pilot like a, school.
But that's like a chancy thing. You may not even get the pilot by standing in the long line. But you're definitely not going to get one if you go in the standby line,
right?
And being a pilot's the best way to go.
Why is that?
Because otherwise, you're just kind of doing maintenance and you're like fixing stuff, you know. It's like, oh,
it's the difference between officer and enlisted.
Yeah, yeah. It's like fixed damage, grunt.
Yeah, that'd be great. And then you go on this line that nobody's in, but it's open, so you go in anyway, and it turns out to be boot camp for stormtroopers. You know, it's really rigid and terrible and no fun at all.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you get in. So.
It's like, let's see some hustle, Cole.
Yeah. And you have to wear the plastic stuff.
Yeah. Cluck, cluck, cluck.
It's your turn to climb under the blistering, burning hot wax machine.
And kick and the Han some Solo in the butt.
Flying Solo.
Mean old Harrison Ford and his audio-animatronic dog.
And clean up where the Wookiees...
You know, what's so weird is the dog looks so fake.
Right.
It's a puppet.
A
Muppet.
I think the making of would have been funnier to watch Harrison Ford scritch in the belly of the real guy in the Greenpoint suit, but instead you're stuck with him.
Well...
But he doesn't care. He gets like 12 million...
I believe I've seen that footage of him acting against... Well, there's an actor standing there saying the lines, but it's not...
Saying the dog's lines?
Well...
No, wait. There's a dog... There's a dog person, yeah, that's from, of course, Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, a French
dog. He's got the I'm a robot for the computer kind of clothes on, yeah.
Yeah, and it reminds me of the bad eyes in Polar Express, you know. Here we are in this time, and they're still getting it wrong? How can that be? Computer movies must be good now.
It's a
puppet. That's not the Irishman.
No. And the Irishman is fake, man. That's just fake. That's the weirdest little thing, too, is they make people's faces... They're not really young. They're just smoothed out. And then their bodies are still 72-year-old guy bodies.
Yeah, straighten up.
But De Niro's so fun to watch, and everybody in it is so fun to watch.
I can't wait to see that one.
But I seriously doubt if the premise in the movie is true.
It's just a movie.
Exactly.
But long enough to be involved with it.
Yeah, and fun to watch because you got some real masters in that one. Including other people from shows like Friday Night Live. They didn't even get lines. Well, maybe they got lines, but those got cut out. The little Chucky O'Brien doesn't say much or anything.
A Chucky movie?
Chucky just died last week.
Oh, it's about time.
He's in bad
but they couldn't kill him.
They
stuck him in the garbage disposal, chopped him with machetes, set him on fire. I think they put him in the fireplace in one movie. They threw him out of a car. They ground him against the edge of a moving train. But he just keeps coming, though he's scarred and uglier each time. How many of those Chucky movies did they make?
Three? Four?
There was
six?
Chucky in the Hood, right?
You're thinking of Leprechaun. The Leprechaun series.
And the Leprechaun went to space, right?
He went to space. He was also in the Hood where he rapped and so on.
Wonderful. When was that? Do you remember?
A long time ago, because...
90s, it had to
be. In movie time, wow.
The very first Leprechaun movie was the introduction of now overly familiar Jennifer Garner. It was her first movie role, as a Leprechaun, as the girl, you know. And she's young.
Jennifer Garner.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's young, but...
I was thinking Connelly for a second.
No, but that shows how long ago, you know, now Jennifer Garner has been around for as long as the beard of Moses. And, of course, the Leprechaun, Warwick Davis, went on to play the title role in Lucasfilm's Willow. You may remember that one.
Big name great.
Plowed behind a pig and challenged the two-headed Ebor Sisk. Hey, I saw that. Now, the next slide
is
quite interesting. If you're just going to look at down at the corner of the image there, you can see the...
Is that like an out? Like
leprechauns
an
actually not
I tried,
standing.
I wasn't able to.
This is a
I
paste-up.
I think you have to have another computer.
There are two face stones, as a matter of fact.
It's not like a straight.
One there, and the other one you can see over there. So let's have the next slide.
I'm mucked about with it, but we might be able to bring it in to a computer.
Now, in this one, you see the first...
I see, yeah.
I'm sorry. This is the wrong slide. Back up.
Let's do that.
No, they're not midgets at all.
I don't think you can say midgets or retarded. The verb are can't be used anymore in today's world.
Midgets are perfectly formed human miniatures. Unlike dwarfs who have a specific physiognomy.
They do not say wordless. It's getting a lot bigger.
They do have high voices because their vocal apparatus is small, making their voices high-pitched. But leprechauns are only about a cubit long, which is the distance between the tip of your finger and your elbow. And that's smaller than a midget. Even General Tom Thumb was bigger than that. I'm sure you remember General Tom Thumb, one of the most famous in midget lore. And at the beginning of the 20th century, a whole group of midgets moved to Florida and started their own village, and they performed in shows, road shows. They were called the Singer Midgets, and are most familiar today for appearing in The Wizard of Oz as the Munchkin people, including the Lollipop Kids, the Lullaby Lees, and other musical groups of the period. Now, this was an exaggeration of the original novel, where the Munchkins were described as short in height. They were known as that because they lived near Mount Munch, the most prominent mountain in the area.
Agree.
In their fourth of the Kingdom of Oz.
Except.
Also inhabited by the Quadlings, the Winkies, and
even though our two countries
the Gillikins,
war,
the Munchkins were, they just happened to be the place where Dorothy landed.
That is a good plan.
The Kingdom of Oz wasn't the only magical country. There were some other ones that were near it, like the Kingdom of Ev. But all were completely isolated from the modern world by the deadly desert which surrounded them. Even if you touched the sand of the deadly desert, you would die. But, of course, Dorothy was carried there in a tornado and the wizard in a balloon. And later, in The Shaggy Man of Oz, the titular character sailed over the desert in a sand sailor, which was like a boat that had runners on it and went over the dunes so nobody had to touch the sands of the deadly desert.
I'm out of here. I've had it with this whole stupid planet. I've had it with Prince. I have had it with everything.
But I had...
Well, that's all right. Close the door gently on your way out.
64.
Yes, in 64, from door to door, I held a salesman's job. I walked the beat from street to street, and that's when I met Bob. Calm down. It's not the... Oh, just a moment.
Yo, hey, yo.
I take it one, two, three,
four. That Bob guy.
Also, leprechauns speak Gaelic, unlike most midgets. They are artificers, makers of things, like other Earthmen, other gnomes, and underground-dwelling creatures.
64.
Of course, famously, they make shoes. Always have been good cobblers, with a last and a little hammer and so on. It is also said they go on excursions riding miniature horses, their own size.
64.
Many years from now.
In 1964, the worldwide nuclear holocaust that took place in the movie On the Beach. Wiping out everybody above the Antipodes. The Australian continent was the last abode of life until radioactive winds should reach it. Well, it said in the paper they finally captured the Peewee Peeper, the little guy who ran upstairs and downstairs in his nightgown, peeping through the window, whispering through the lock.
Oh, and his little cute nightgown with those nightcaps. I love those little nightcaps people wore in the olden days.
Yeah, but the cops finally caught up with him.
Oh, and there goes the Peewee Peeper jail.
Induced him to talk. Boy, did he ever talk. They couldn't get him to stop. So, all is known now about Wee Willie Winky, as he was called. And he wanted all the kids to be in bed by 8 o'clock. I mean, what was the point of that?
Well, because in those days, no electric lights to keep you distracted all night.
And so those rug rats would be running around bumping into the furniture in the dark. Yes, yep, they needed to be squared away in bed, tied in if necessary. Put out the candles, turn out the light.
Vote today, do what's right. See, and when you vote, your soul is lifted unto political heaven.
And at the polls, armed Trump supporters will make sure electoral irregularities occur.
What would the Trump armband have on?
While the Democrats will provide a Pluperton Sunday to everyone who fills out a ballot.
Ah, thanks.
What would the armband have on?
Yeah, the Trump round shirt
keep
armband.
Keep America great?
Yeah, you're right. It'd be the letters.
Make me great.
So a man was wearing a red parody hat that said "Make 50 Great Again" or something for his birthday, and some woman saw it and thought it was the other kind and attacked him and punched him in the face and left a little hole in his cheek, which was also in the paper.
And that was Michael Pepe. There goes Michael Pepe, the political heaven.
I saw a clip from a Larry David show. I don't know if you saw it or K-Rob saw it. But
this is Transformer heaven.
Larry David is driving down the street, and he moves into a lane which is occupied by a motorcycle. The motorcycle rider is extremely angry. And saying, "What's the matter with you?" And it's about to attack him, and he's saying, "I'm sorry, I didn't see you." And he's screaming at him, and then Larry David reaches down and he puts on a Make America Great hat again. Immediately the motorcycle guy changes. Well, okay, we'll just be careful next time. You know, we got to be safe. And
in our country,
now I know,
proud Americans.
Same.
Well, you know, it might be a safety feature. You could carry around one of those hats
and fool the pinks very quickly.
You don't think so much.
Professor Pinkster, Albert Pinkham Ryder,
we scientists should work
Sydney
together.
Pink, and
so I am offering you and your crew a chance to join our mission.
Yes, in this little cave, new prehistoric paintings have been discovered, which have been compared to Marvel Comics.
Another day, another dollar war.
And in the New Yorker, the writer compared the discovery of the prehistoric cave with its Marvel action heroes on the wall to the current Marvel movies that have been denounced by Coppola and Scorsese, but shows that the superhero idea is certainly ancient and goes back to prehistoric times, where the hunters hunting down the prey were depicted as alligator men, wolf men, bear men, and so on, with animal heads prefiguring the ancient Egyptian gods.
Goddamn lies are on you
now. Now calm down, calm down. It's just simply a scientific discovery.
Lies isn't here. Lies doesn't use that moniker anymore, does he?
I don't believe a word you say. I don't know. I've never had him correct me when I used it reference to him.
Never know in this brassy future. Oh, you're going to have another cigarette.
Yes.
I'm never going
and
to bed.
Curse Sir Walter Raleigh. He was such a stupid guest. Oh, there's Aunt Bertha. And her younger...
No, she canceled her tour.
Yeah, that video was very big at one time. The religious part comes in later. That's what they do. They get your attention and then they give you their
Godzilla
come to Jesus.
Megatron guys.
Megatron?
Yeah, like
wasn't that one of those
Optimus
monsters?
Prime versus Darth Vader versus
Those are all little
Gorillatron.
Godzilla has enormous size and durability on his side.
So do the Transformers. They turn into trucks.
Well, the truck and the robot that they turn into have the same mass, though. They don't increase in size, they just change shape.
And then in the middle of all that, they increase it. Well, maybe you're right. Maybe they stay wherever assigned size they were as Transformers.
Certainly the Godzilla is bigger, about twice as big as the Beast from 20,000 Fathoms.
Damn
according
beast.
To... Godzilla supposedly 400 feet long.
That we do not know how to worship HAL 9000.
And I don't mean chicken feet either. Or should we say A Godzilla? Because they can be killed, and the original Godzilla died as people know who think about it.
From the previous administration.
Now, Mr. Trump says that the reason he appears to be orange is that those non-energy-saving light bulbs are the ones that we ought to use, and the ones that save energy make his skin look orange. But I was reading in an old magazine before the election, and even back in New York, other New Yorkers were complaining about Trump and him being orange and so on. So he's been orange for a long, long time.
The free orange state. No, the free orange deep state.
Then there's William of Orange.
And the 100 Years Orange War. And the inverted orange bowl.
Boy, I wish I had an orange right now.
I've been scarfing on tangerines and stuff lately.
A whatty?
Tangerines and...
Oh, yeah. I've got some at home. I'll have one when I return.
If Megatron hasn't stamped out my house by just walking around...
That would be a drag. Well, there's a new Godzilla movie, one of the new ones. It starts with... opening in the city of San Francisco when Godzilla is there and everything is trashed. You know, the people are in a state of misery and he's still there stomping around. What was
that?
What
if all the Korean monsters
That's not
met up with all the Shin
Godzilla. Well, there was Young Gary, Monster of the Deep. Wasn't that a Korean one?
I think it was.
And what about the North Korean giant monster?
Yeah, I have that's one of my favorites. I have a copy of that where the Humies raise the little monster and he doesn't hurt the cities because he remembers his Humi parents.
Well, that's warm and fuzzy, but not too entertaining from a movie standpoint.
Well, North Korea, you want to keep things on the low and slow, because otherwise you have the machine gun everybody up to see the movie.
Yeah, almost makes it not worth seeing the movie.
Almost.
It'd be machine gunned after
the whole family, yeah. Almost, though. You do want to see a good movie on occasion.
Especially about a big monster. So, classified, but worth the trouble. The same movie that I was referring to also has Mothra in it and what else? Ghidorah, the three-headed monster. Who I think they blow up in the end, but at the very end or the post-credit sequence or something, it looks as if the bad guy is getting ready to revive Ghidorah from one of his severed heads to grow the rest of a full-sized body, a.k.a. Reptilicus. I mean,
yay, similar, Reptilicus.
Similar to Reptilicus.
Don't they grow him from his little tail or something?
Yes,
like
they grew it from...
like a lizard.
A piece of tail.
Yeah.
But the lizard can grow the tail. The tail can't grow the lizard. But with Reptilicus, it's probably different.
He's special. I remember lying in a pile of cigarette butts watching Reptilicus on a rainy Hawaiian night.
Cigarette butts?
Because the stage, the outdoor theater had been built as a stage in World War II, so it had a regular stage, and it rained, so all the adults left, but all of us kids ran up to the stage where it wasn't quite as wet, and lay there, you know, 2 feet from this giant screen looking up at it. But we were thrilled, because you could transgress rules like that back then, even though you're lying in a pile of old cigarette butts that are semi-wet.
I assume you saw Targets somewhere along the line.
No.
Never saw that one?
I don't think so.
I think that was Peter Bogdanovich's first movie. Part of it is about a young Texas man and his rigid family life, and he turns out to be a character that Texas sniper, Stuart Whitman, who shot people from the tower at the University of Texas, is like. And he shoots people from a bridge, and then he goes to a drive-in theater, and he climbs up inside the screen, and there's this little window, and he can look out and take pot shots of the people in the theater. But they're all isolated in their cars. They don't know the other people are being killed. And whenever there's a bang in the movie, he takes a rifle and sights it, the camera shows, and he shoots. Meanwhile, that drive-in theater is being visited by...
a typical American family.
No, not by a typical American... well, they're in the car.
Their beautiful daughter-in-law.
But,
and their only son.
No, that's all wrong.
A homicidal maniac.
He's up in the theater. The drive-in.
What are you doing?
The drive-in screen was thick, and it actually did contain rooms and sometimes offices.
Gonna shoot some pigs.
Targets, a movie about a war.
Yeah, no, I never did see it.
But they've also sent Byron Orlok, an old washed-out horror actor, played by Boris Karloff, to the theater because it's a monster movie rally. And at the end... The killer sees Boris Karloff coming at him, and he's confused because Karloff is on the screen also. And Karloff, old, toddles up to him and just slaps him in the face. Slap, slap, slap. And he cries, you know, and drops his rifle.
And the best part about these movies is seeing L.A. in 1967 or whatever.
But this is in Texas.
Yeah, but they're shooting in L.A. So
I'm not sure with Bogdanovich, you got a camera crew out
right now. It's
oh, really?
LA. Yeah. You have to rent the movie. It's owned by somebody.
Well, everybody owns everything.
Story by Polly Platt and Peter Bogdanovich.
Peter Banana Fish.
I'm sure he went. Well, I'm sure he shot parts of it in Texas because he likes that Texas. And there's Boris Karloff on the big screen.
He did make that Texas movie in Texas. You know,
last movie. Last picture show.
The last picture everything. Show. Yes, right.
The last movie is
Nixon
a real treat.
Nixon saw it. The last movie is in what? Ecuador or something?
I think Peru. Yeah. Lots of cocaine, folks, on that one.
And llamas.
That looks silly. Well, but I'm glad they hired Boris Karloff and gave him a big check.
Mm-hmm.
We always want him to get the monies.
Byron Orlok, yes.
67 by Satakoi Productions. I never saw that, or maybe I was mind-washed to forget it.
It's pretty good, actually.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look that up. I like handheld camera shots of bad car chases. Anyway, we're down here at the show.
Yeah, we're all just kind of restless, milling around.
Let me go quick, get some coffee.
Waiting for the next
show bar.
It's not open at this hour, I believe.
No, it's 4:20. What drugs can I do then?
Well, there's a magnolia leaf and a turtle shell. And over here we've got...
liquid slack.
This liquid slack isn't for everybody. This is powerful stuff. You know, you want to take it easy. First you drink a slug of turtle shell, and then take a little bit of liquid slack, and then some magnolia tea, and then a little bit more of your liquid slack.
And then become a target.
A right-wing reaction.
Should it be coming out like that?
I think somebody took
the show all over.
Yeah,
the
they
floor.
Took the. They unscrewed the cap. It's leaking down. If they think I'm going to clean it up, they got another thing coming.
I'm still waiting for that other thing to come.
It should be here by Tuesday.
Host. I haven't seen that in a while.
That's a good one.
The Parasite, The Host.
I like The Host.
I haven't caught up with it yet, but I heard that Trump was complaining about Parasite winning.
He doesn't like that Bong Joon-ho couldn't speak English and is a foreigner.
Oh, no.
Yes.
The guy's so great at just spewing chaos and keeping everybody away from the actual issues. Just throw stuff out there and make red. He reminds me of Don King. You know, emphasis on hair and confusion. Do some magic tricks. They won't notice.
He was always like that.
Yep. And he was fun when he was younger. Now he's present.
I thought he was always tiresome, young or old.
Well, fun in the sense of...
In New York, at any rate.
And that's on the other side of the country, which was so nice back then.
Yeah, New York doesn't move around much. It's still on the other side of the country. Some people like it that way. Others wish it would take a little trip out here. We could get a little Manhattan here in California.
Yeah, New York should go to Burning Man.
The Bronx, the Staten Island.
Host. What's the other one? Cloverfield. Snowpiercer.
Snowpiercer was Bong Joon-ho's other movie.
Oh, no, I meant in general movie style. But yes, okay, Snowpiercer, yeah. He paid a lot for that name.
There's no piercer like Snowpiercer. We were trying to figure out the other day, how many Billy Jack movies there were?
Four. And they should, you know, Tracy's threatened to do a film. I think she should, a film night of all four. That'd be great.
But
this is so hard to go through.
But yeah, life is too short.
Maybe five.
Yeah,
is that
that's
right?
The thing.
I think you're right. I think there's five because it's.
Well, there was
losers,
one that was
three.
Hardly released at all. I think maybe Billy Jack Goes to Washington, the last of them.
Yeah, you're right. And then there's the Master Something Fighter.
The Master Gunfighter.
Yeah, that was
Born
so
Losers
terrible.
Was the first. Billy Jack was the second.
And then Billy Jack, because my...
The Trial
my
of Billy
was,
Jack.
Yeah, my wife was in those two. The second and third one.
Billy
Siri,
Jack Goes to
way.
Washington.
And
Siri
a whole bunch
was
other,
in there, huh?
Yeah, because that was a Montessori school here in Berkeley. And
well, I'm glad Siri got to be on film.
To be that.
And has some immortality
of,
on film.
That one.
Yeah,
and they're all they're in the jury scene. They're in the along the road holding their fists up for freedom scene. They're all like, you know, 15 and 16 and 17. It was a great. They got to go out to New Mexico and be silly kids. But and then there's the one after that is that Washington? Yeah, it has to be. And then the Master Gunfire, and they get worse and worse and worse.
Which is the one where he's meditating out in the desert and.
I think that's the first one.
They, a rattlesnake bites yeah, him, but he's the, so I mean, holy that he can't hurt him. Or
yeah, the second and third one both have the fake, the faux snake scenes. So that's why I think we should have a movie night with all five, and you have to stay awake and watch.
Billy Jack dog food, the kind Billy Jack eats. Yes, those commercials, of course we all
After all, Discovery is American property.
The Cherry Orchard by Ensign Chekhov.
Ta-Nehisi Coates.
It's an arrestable offense because we've decided that you can be arrested for certain things in areas that are designated high drug crime areas. It is not an arrestable offense on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. That's a policy decision. We've made a decision that we are going to invest in black communities through the criminal justice system and in no other way. That's a decision. And so, you know, I mean, that don't mean that the officer, you know, shouldn't have got fired the day as he would. That don't mean that at all. But if that's your standard, if that's the enemy, you're just going to keep coming back again and again and again. And you end up talking about individual officers, which, I mean, in its own way, it's actually a really conservative formulation of the question. Because it says if I can get more individual, moral, correct acting officers in place, then maybe we can fix this, as opposed to looking at entire systems.
Advancing the conversation to abolish racism for over 70 years. 94.1 KPFA.
After months of precautions, lockdowns, and social distancing, the coronavirus cases and hospitalizations continue to spike in the Bay Area. It's really KPFA's communal duty to remind everybody to remain cautious, stay vigilant about wearing masks, hand washing, and social distancing. We would all like to return to our regular activities, but first we have to remain alive. Be safe, be smart, be well. And thanks for listening to KPFA.
You're listening to 94.1 KPFA, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online worldwide at kpfa.org.
How terrifying it is, the silence, the unresponsive silence.
That's good of you and your government, Dimitri, said Floyd.
Floyd? Floyd the bartender? Or Floyd the electrician in Chameleons? Or Floyd Thursby? Remember Floyd Thursby? Wasn't he married to Bridget O'Shaughnessy? Or am I totally wrong about that? But Floyd, well, he didn't make it. His life was a short one, not necessarily a merry one. But he's quite important in that story. Not to be confused with Mr. Archer, who also dies very early on. Of the private investigatory firm Spade and Archer, leaving only Sam Spade to run the business. And he never took the Archer part of the sign down, though there was no longer an Archer. Just as Ebenezer Scrooge's banking firm was called Scrooge and Marley because he had once had a partner known as Jacob Marley. When he died, he didn't bother to take Marley's name off the firm. No, that penny pinching money saving can get you in a heap of hot water. So, old Ebenezer found. And as seen in Scrooge, the musical, Scrooge, the carnival rides, Scrooge, the ice cream cone, and Aunt Bertha's happy family. According to the Bible, nope.
Related to the Knights of St. Pete.
Yeah. Then there was the night they raided Minsky's. With,
well, there's a classic.
Jason Robards.
That'd be a good movie night kind of thing.
Yeah, that's
so
a fun,
alien
fun
to
movie.
Anybody now.
Right,
humor,
right.
So far from. Yeah, I haven't seen that in years. I remember as a kid thinking, oh, it's probably really cool. They raid someplace. I'll go see that. It was so adult. I thought, here's Goldfinger. I lucked out White Elephant Sale. Found something I'd always kind of looked for without even knowing it. It was a DVD set of Dr. No, Goldfinger, and From Russia with Love.
Oh, great. Well,
which is the only ones I ever wanted.
Yeah.
Except for Dr. No, either. But I'm happy to have it.
Dr. No has its moments. From Russia with Love has to be the best of them.
That and the Goldfinger one is the happiest, the kind of the peak of that moment. And then it was over, folks. And then you got Roger Moore.
Well, there was still...
George Lazenby's not there.
There was still, Honor Medicine's Heaps. What was it? The one Roald Dahl wrote.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the one in Japan, the one which is parodied in Terry Gilliam's Brazil.
The Moonraker one?
Not Moonraker. The one...
Welcome to Japan, Mr. Bond.
Yes, Tiger Tanaka.
The opening shot for most Americans for a Datsun 240Z.
Head of Kempe Tai.
If you do, and you'll clean it up. Do you expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond, I expected you to die.
Yes, but he does manage to talk his way out of that one.
He doesn't get squeezed in a car like Mr. Napoleon.
Yes.
But great shots of Switzerland.
A cube.
You
mean on Her Majesty's Secret Service?
No, I was talking about Goldfinger.
Oh, in
the original where
Goldfinger.
He says he wants his gold now, and he winds up with his gold in the car. Remember that? Yes. Odd Job brings the car back and says they're going to heat the car up and melt the gold out of it before then. Which means they get gold with little greasy Mr. Napoleon's leftovers.
By that time, he'll be turned into vapor. The Human Vapor, the title of another movie.
And that wrestler who played Odd Job left for a few months to film a movie. When he came back, he was huge in the wrestling world in Hawaii.
He was good.
And he would get in the ring and throw his hat, of course, his bowler across the
field. He liked to throw his weight around.
And throw his hat in the ring, get it, wink, wink.
Okay, You Only Live Twice is the one I'm thinking
yes, of.
Of
course, yeah.
But then what's the one with Jimmy Dean and Natalie Wood's sister, and it's in Las Vegas, and the one that made many Americans think the moon landing was fake because they break into a studio which is filming it during the long
nice.
Chase.
Is that a Roger Moore one?
No, that's the last Sean Connery one, if you don't count the unaffiliated one he made much later called Never Say Never Again.
Right, you can't really count that one.
Yeah, that's not made by Broccoli and Saltzman like the
and it's not the greatest movie. I'm glad he got his money, because what happens, folks, his money manager absconded with tons of his loot. So he had to go back on his promise never to do. I just found a copy of The Offense, which I think was the second or third movie he did. He did The Hill after James Bond.
Well, The Hill
was depressing.
Was a good movie. Yes, it's where they bark at each other in British accents all through the movie.
Right. Then he did
hard
The Offense,
to understand.
Which I love. He's a detective who flips out. He's been investigating child murders and rapes and stuff a little too long, and he loses it and kills the guy he's investigating. And then the second half is not Gail Good, but one of that class. He and Sean Connery, sort of like in a Shakespearean setup, you know, delving into why Sean Connery killed this suspect.
With extreme prejudice. There's even a Tarzan movie where he's one of the bad guys.
Crazy talk.
And one of them, I don't know the title of it. If you looked at his filmography, I could probably pick it out. He plays a big, stupid guy who travels with a little sharp, smart Cockney guy.
Kind of Lenny. I remember.
Yes, do you remember that one in black and white?
There's one where he plays the secretary for a very rich man, and the plot, it's just before Bond. He looks just like Bond. It's about a year before.
Mm-hmm.
And he kills the old man to get his money, and the servants
Holy Raskolnikov.
But a lot of the movie revolves around tape recorders, so of course I had to steal all these scenes of tape recorders being played.
Tape recorder.
And at the end, the old man had taped Sean Connery saying that he was going to kill him and stuff, and so the cops get him.
No.
Actually, he runs. Sean Connery runs, and one of the servants, they really hate the guy at this point in the movie, rolls a wheelchair in front of Sean Connery, which causes him to fall down the stairs and break his criminal neck.
See, it was wheelchair accessible.
But he played thugs for a while. That's part of what got him there.
Will thugs turn you on, or thugs turn on you?
None of it makes sense anymore.
Well, the thing is, if you hire some thugs, they might not stay as employees as the thing. There's a great plot in that somewhere.
All right, set plot lines.
With the thugs. Straight from the thugs' candy kitchens. Yeah, these days everybody's eating thug cuisine. There have been several articles about...
No, what is that?
What's thug cuisine?
Yeah.
It looks
so
like
keep up.
Giant sandwiches and things. It looks, it's a hearty cuisine. If you believe in it. I don't believe those guys have any time to cook fancy sandwiches or whatever. They're involved in thug activities.
See this?
It's showtime.
There is one thing that between our warm hearts and the bitter cold.
I admit, From Russia with Love has its slow parts, but it also has some pretty cool parts, adding to the James Bond mystique. Particularly in the first few minutes of the movie, before the credits, I think, when James Bond dies, is killed. That was an interesting way to start the movie.
Exactly, because they always had a big cell before the credits, and that was one of the best ever, because you go, boing, well, the movie's over, man, he's dead.
He was killed by Ivan Flamnik, Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw, right.
The merciless, emotionless killer, who turns out to have some emotions in the end, mostly anger.
And the Kreb character lived on in the Gold Member and all that stuff.
Yes, but she was quite wonderful. She was in Kurt Weill's pre-war cabarets in Berlin in the Weimar Republic. But of course, her part was satirized in the Austin Powers movies. The whole thing now is blurred, but She was a fairly hateful old bag in that movie. With the shoes, where you click them and poison spurs shoot out, where she tries to kick James Bond in the shins. That's a mean old lady.
Americans drink more coffee.
I wish I had some right now. With thick cream, cinnamon, a couple of pastries on the edge of the saucer. Before climbing into bed for a long, uninterrupted sleep. Until the phone rings. And it's the call center in India.
Of course you wouldn't wear a shoe on your head.
Please go to your computer and turn it on right now.
Computer on.
The hell I will. Turn on your computer. This is AT&T. This is George Andrews.
A shoe doesn't belong on your head.
This is Freddie Smith. One time they called and said, "This is Robert Redfarb." That didn't quite sound like a honky name like it was supposed to.
Will you accept the call? I'm Robert Redfarb.
Accept it? Hell no.
Will you accept a philosophical change for Robert Redfarb?
Will you accept the Savior into your heart right now? Stand by
for transmission. But my government would prefer that we go alone on Discovery 2.
Okay. Oh, on Discovery 2 what, though? I mean, I understand V'ger just melted. It went out.
What?
It got caught in the flame barrier. How ironic that just like in this island Earth, there is a flame barrier. That was thought to be nonsense, but... You see, it seems our sun has left one at the edge of the solar system, at the heliopause. And the poor little space probe got all melted like a Roosevelt dime in one of those carnival machines that distorts the dime and makes FDR's face look fat and flat.
At about the time that the Leona was finished, Floyd's calculations reveal some startling data.
Floyd? Yes, Haywood Floyd.
Or Count Floyd,
Floyd
sitting on the couch after
light
his heart
profanity.
Attack.
I wish we knew what the hell it is. I guess we
hell
don't damn know what it is. Damn it
what
to hell, we don't know what it is.
What about the flame barrier in Planet of the Apes?
Flame barrier in Planet of the Apes? There was no such thing.
Yeah, the Forbidden Land.
Well, that's on Earth. That was the Forbidden Zone. And there were no flames, except in the second movie, there were, because they were mental projections sent by fat underground mutants living in the ruins of radioactive New York.
Mutant shaming.
Including Victor Buono was one of them. He made a good mutant. We call him Mutant.
Why did you have to bring him up?
Well, he's in the movie. I like him in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, too.
Man, there's a film night filmer thing.
Made by Wilmer the Filmer.
Nobody remembers that, nor would figure out what's going on in the movie.
No, I think that movie has legs. It's Robert Aldrich. It's...
Sorry.
There was, it's got Joan Crawford, it's got Betty Davis, and a big fat rat. I reiterate, it contains a big fat rat.
Oh, it's Willard's buddies again.
No, he dead. He a dead rat. He's a big dead rat. It's a dead rat in that movie. Dead. Dad rat. Dead rat. They called him Dad. while he was alive, and they cooked him for the movie. Or was it just an elaborate special effect? It was made out of paper, wax, wood chips, who can say? Only visible on screen for a second. But what a horrible reveal. The rat.
Yes, so it is. A hat belongs on your head. I am a hat. You are a shoe. I belong on the head. You.
Anybody ever see?
Yes.
Bed knobs and broomsticks. I read the book, but I never saw the movie.
Me neither.
It beat out When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth for a Special Effects Academy Award.
So it is. A hat belongs
terrible.
On your head.
Terrible.
Terrible. Only time that, I mean, When Dinosaurs Rule the Earth has no virtues except for those special effects. The only time a Hammer movie was ever nominated for an Academy Award. Well, many gallons of water have run under that bridge and rushed on in their resistless current to the ocean that absorbs it all. Okay, kid. All right. Joey boy, you bother me. All right. Now, what's that movie where Bill Murray is devoured by a giant mole at the end? Do you remember that one, K-Rob? Do you know what movie that is? A huge mole comes in and gets Bill Murray. Remember that one? They all live underground. They live miles underground. And also giant moths, giant this and that. Is just hanging by a thread. Oh well, I saw it, or at least I saw that scene. And it starred Saoirse Ronan, or however you pronounce her name, who's in the current version of Little Women that's on the screen right now. She appeared in that Peter Jackson movie about the girl who's killed by the monstrous guy and must wander the earth as a ghost who can't interfere with the affairs of the living. Another supernatural one by Jackson was The Frighteners with Michael J. Fox. Oh, me.
I'm frightened.
The days, the mad days we have seen. Jesus, Jesus, the days we have seen. Remember old Tom Cobley from Herefordshire? Dead. Yes, he's dead. Yes, all the days we've seen. And Puck of Puck's Hill? Oh, he died a long time ago. Oh, those days.
Those days?
The years of the spring, days of the morn. Mornings at seven, the hillside, dew pearl. The lark's on the wing, the snail's on the thorn. God's in his heaven, all's right with the world.
You just never know.
Twinkle, twinkle, little bat.
Here are coffee beans being stripped from a bush.
How I wonder where you're at. Up above the world you fly, like a tea tray in the sky. Twinkle, 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 twinkle.
Yeah,
man wanted in armed robbery cases captured. He held up two banks with a fountain pen, but clerks were not sure that it was not a dangerous weapon, never having seen a fountain pen.
Hey, I was there once in my life.
That bank?
No, I was
a young child in a European country and I brought a fountain pen or a ballpoint pen, stylo bic, to school, and it caused a riot because people there knew what it was, but nobody could afford one.
What did they write with? A rock? Blah, 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 blah.
Quill pen and
a stick? Rah,
rah. And an inkwell.
Oh, a quill pen and
that's
ink?
That's what we used in school, yeah.
Oh, when scratching across the page.
Form. Yep. I loved it. And the kid behind me drank his ink every morning.
Ew.
First thing.
Drinking ink and...
Oof, he's probably not even alive now. He has things that are in French ink.
His insides are all black.
He's an inker and sitting on the city begging for ink.
Certainly distasteful. I thought you were going to say they put the girl's pigtail in the inkwell and all those youthful antics.
No, because the girls were in a separate part of the school.
So you can't do that. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Which intrigued me because I'd never seen that before, separating young men from... Littlefield.
No, they're distracting. Those females are distracting.
Indeed.
You can't do your trigonometry with Sally Sue Apple Blossom there. And now it's time to put away your pens and books and... We need somebody who can run the projector. That's you. Come up here and do it.
Discovery One.
I smoke a cigarette and you show a movie.
Yeah, I was one of those kids. I loved to do that because you got to get out of the classroom and go down the hall and get the cool projector. And nobody else
and
knew
then
how to
run
do
the projector.
Thing.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
Special ritual. Floyd, you were the
Dr.
only
Chandra,
one.
The inventor of HAL. And
let's try that. There we go. Littlefield Military Vehicle Museum.
Is it open?
No, it's all gone.
Oh.
And I was just looking for the edit I did.
It's not that easy. What?
You edited?
Oh, that's not even. Yeah, I went on a tour there, and you know, of course, they say stay with the.
Do not
stay with the tour, which I immediately ignored, and I ran around for 4 hours taking pictures of every single armored vehicle I could from every angle I could think of. But that's just not right, folks.
That's just wrong.
No, baby.
Sweetie.
Although we call them coffee beans, they really are beans grow inside their red fruit.
Coffee beans, red fruit growing on a tree. Picked by
one of the biggest exports of Middle
Juan
America.
Valdez.
Large plantations may have a million trees.
These are the hands of Juan Valdez. Strong, sun-browned, sensitive hands. They pick only the best beans for Folgers Instant Coffee. Hey, Juan Valdez, you missed one over here. Oops, I dropped it. Now you better bend over and pick it up. Coffee beans, coffee has beans. By Washington, D.C.
This washes away the hulls or out of question.
Oh, this is a terrifying sight. I don't know if everybody should watch this.
The most eerie, the most chilling, the most terrifying motorcycle horror film ever made.
I am called Blood.
Werewolves on Wheels in Color is the most unusual, bizarre film yet.
Not only are they bikers, but they're also werewolves.
Werewolves.
Mocking the supernatural.
Yes?
Scoffing the warnings of tarot, one by one they die. Unnatural, unbelievable deaths. But still they do not heed the warnings of the bride of Satan. They are afraid.
Gosh, this movie's got everybody.
They cannot fight what they cannot see and do not understand.
Oh, they're blind werewolves on
bikes. See, werewolves on wheels, in color. The Chiller Thriller from the Fanfare Corporation.
Yeah, you try wearing that mask and driving a bike.
Werewolves on wheels, on drugs, on the screen. Now, look at them go. They seem to be having a good time, actually. It's the werewolf on wheels dance scene.
Are you joking?
They're doing the loop. Ah, the Moog synthesizer. Where would we be without this humble instrument?
To Walter Kernow, the chief engineer of both Discovery ships.
Did we ever finish Frankenstein Meets the Space Monster? I don't think we came to the end of that one. Arg.
There were six Russian cosmonauts and scientists in Emiliano's crew.
What
plus their woman commander, Captain Tanya Kibitz.
Captain Tanya Kibitz. She brought her chainsaw on board. Destabilized the space mission with threat of chainsawing
power tool drag race
in space.
Yeah, Katie Bell was standing in the danger zone.
She was there. And Mrs. Philo was almost roasted when a sheet of flame shot out of some contraption and right toward where she was sitting in the stands, but she got out of the way just in time.
Hey, Franks.
Well, I just said today is the same stupid state parade, annual parade.
It looks is here.
Everyone
you were
got
right.
A lot of nice costumes, and I had a chance to talk
costumes?
To them.
Costumes? I dress like this all the
they
time.
They told me about the populations of the other galaxies and regarding me as a movie star. So hopefully a few years from now, I might go to the United Nations and try to get it all proven, too. And hopefully the weather will get better today, and hopefully for a nice March today.
Now, they're just marching through the city. They're not going to go to Joe Concrete Playground.
What?
They're not going to go. They're not going to go to the playground. Okay? They're just going to march. They'll touch the tomb of the unregistered voter, the banker's heart, entrails of the naked motormen, and all the rest of it. Do the jump up and down, the parade rest, and of course, Wavy Gravy will be there waving and winking at the crowd as he rides on the Doggy Diner barge, captained by John Philip Law. Everybody performs the quaint native dance called the Gokonka. All the movements are stylized, but every gesture has a meaning of its own.
Yes, and it's time for the meaning of our...
How about a nice roast beef sandwich?
Oh, I couldn't eat a thing more.
Made with real Reesburg sauce.
And Chunderley's hot sauce. What was it? Castleberry's.
Barbecue sandwich?
The funny thing is, we were watching all those old Castleberry's barbecue sandwich ads, and at the same time, some news item appeared about how Castleberry's was accused of poisoning a whole bunch of people.
Grains, nose hair length plan, energy.
way. If he was not, however, if this approaches our denial of research, including intermittence,
it's a remarkable device.
I am the maniac. I am talking to you. And you.
My God.
And you. You dare
Hey, what are you?
What started out as an inside joke among two self-proclaimed weirdos from Fort Worth, Texas, soon becomes much more than they bargained for when they decide to turn their conservative Southern ideology on its head and invent a new religion all their own. In J.R. Bob Dobbs and the Church of the Subgenius, we go on quite a journey. It is remarkable, and it is fun, and it is irreverent, and it's sometimes, in a weird way, serious as well. So I think that's a great way to sort of get our conversation started. And I'm going to introduce to our audience the director, producer, and writer, and that would be Sandy K. Boone, as well as the Right Reverend Philo Drummond or Steve Wilcox. To both of you, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yes, thank you so much. I just had so much fun with this film. Let me start by asking the director, producer, and writer of J.R. Bob Dobbs and the Church of the Subgenius, and that would be Sandy K. Boone. How did you hear about this particular this church? How did you hear about all this?
Well, actually, my late husband was a member of the group, and he met them. He had a dear friend that was in Dallas, Texas, and they came all together and they were playing. He took him to go listen to a band called the Pink Boys, and they were all part of this group or knew this group. And that's how we originally met. So my late husband really was the reason he made the movie called Invasion of the Illuminated People, which was also inspired by the Church of the Subgenius. And I used a lot of the clips of my late husband's movie, in the Subgenius movie.
What year was this? Was this fairly recent, or was it back in the day? When was that?
Oh, no. That was the original movie was done in 1980, 81. Yeah, okay. For Invasion of the Illuminated People. But the group knew each other 79, 80, that era. Okay. And punk was thriving, and we were in Dallas, and then we had moved to Austin to go to film school. Here at UT.
Well, let's bring into our conversation Dr. Drummond, Steve Wilcox. Dr. Drummond, tell us a little bit about your getting together with Reverend Ivan Stang, or also known as Douglas Smith. Tell us a little bit about the origin story of all of this.
Okay, well, we've gotten together on just some kind of a group of people that were artistic and creative, and we had these Sunday brunches. And so Reverend Stang and I got the idea that we needed to start our own religious cult. And actually, there was another motivation going on. He and I both thought that we were really funny guys and that we thought we ought to be able to write comedy. And one of the things we thought might be a good vehicle to display our talents would be to put this silly pamphlet together that was recounting this secret organization. So we spent a lot of time visiting with the Scientologists and at CanCar and all these various spinoff kind of organizations that were, you know, new agey, kind of new age, new world religions and things. And we went to a lot of seminars, and he and I would sit in the front row, and we would be taking copious notes about what we ought to include in our religion. You know, we had to make it kind of like a Frankenstein monster where we could take from every familiar trope from every major religion and mix it with all these weird offshoots, these cult-like religions, and come up with this pamphlet that we could leave places. And actually, the leaving was secondary to the mailing out to... We initially mailed the pamphlet to 350 publishers because we were still thinking we'd get a job, you know. Somebody would see it and go, oh, this is funny, we should hire these guys, you know, like that really happens. So anyway, we were still young and naive and thought that was a possibility. Actually, we were shooting for Saturday Night Live. We thought that's where we ought to be writing comedy, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So we put together this pamphlet. We mailed it out, and we started leaving it in places. We didn't know what to do. It was hard to find a distributor for something that weird. And so we kind of started leaving it in the same places that all the weird religious organizations did. It was like a super chick track we could leave in places. We even had a thing where we would visit local record stores and secondary type, you know, alternative stores and things like that. And we would sneak in there and leave our pamphlets on their periodical shelf. It was always interesting to me. I wish I could have figured out what it would be like to be at the store when somebody brought it up to ring up. And this was maybe the first time that the person who was ringing it up had even seen it. And but we called that drop lifting. It was like the opposite of shoplifting, you know. So we did that for a while, but the mailing was a big deal. There was some peripheral. We got a lot of, I have a big collection of rejection notes, or rejection letters. There's like 100 of them, three of which ultimately published our publications later on after we'd made a little bit. We came back to them, and they had actually published a couple of our books. But this big rejection list, a few of the people that had been peripherally involved in some of those publishing organizations, one of which was like Rip Off Press, which was publishing underground comic books and things like that. And we got the attention of some people like R. Crumb and Paul Mavridis, and a lot of our West Coast underground comics artists liked it a lot. The story goes is that the publisher threw it in the trash. Paul Mavridis retrieved it from the trash and gave it to Doug Wellman, who was another early hierarchy member. He's known as Puzzling Evidence, and he was the one that kind of exposed us to the whole idea of this big tape network that existed at the time, which got us involved in making a lot of recordings and distributing recordings. And this was kind of like pre-internet days, so... I don't know, maybe you were even aware of it. I think that's probably some documentary material there for this giant tape network, cassette tape network that existed back then, when they'd make tapes and send it to these various people on this network, and then they would trade with other people. And it was something that kind of at the time was very popular in underground circles. So he was one of the ones that got us started on the whole audio portion of the church. But, you know, after the initial pamphlet, we got quite a bit of feedback, only none of it had really any real money attached to it. A lot of great attention from interesting people. But so wasn't too long after that we started thinking about, well, if we're really a cult, we better have another pamphlet. We better have some testimonials. We better have, you know, questionnaires. We need all this ancillary type material that will, prove, you know, okay, well, we're actually a real cult. Yeah. We may be kind of a joke cult, but it's still a serious joke and we take it seriously. And so, you know, that's, we went forth with sort of that perspective, and it started to really roll quite a bit.
Yeah.
And
Well, just real quick, there is something about this. And in fact, in the film, you pose that question. You and Reverend Stang talk about this idea that you could have been a Scientology if you had chosen to. And I mean, you could have. Now, this wasn't your predisposition, and it didn't at all. But the idea that you were getting people who got what you were talking about, I think that's the important part. I'll sort of classify these people, amateur psychologists that I am, but they're sort of this anti-authoritarian, free-thinking people who would have been diametrically opposed to joining a Scientology. However, would have been completely enthralled with the idea of joining an anti-Scientology cult.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was part of our main thrust at the very beginning, is that we want to make it for people who feel alienated by society, for people that are not joiners, people that are loners, people that you don't want to join things. How do you find those people, and how do you tap into, not necessarily how do you do it, but those are the ones we were aiming at, you know. Yeah. the everybody who was like the rejections of society, you know.
Yeah.
And then we would like, kind of like Groucho Marx, you know, I wouldn't want to be a member of any club that would have me as a member, but you know, those were the people we were looking for. Yeah. The yeah. ones that didn't want to be members of the club that would have them as a member. So,
well, this is exactly why I wish I had been aware of you, because I used to use that line all the time to describe my own life back in that time. Yeah, I was a big Groucho fan who was also a classic anti-authoritarian, anti-joiner kind of guy.
Oh,
his
yeah.
personality was such. Well, I want to ask Sandy, in terms of sort of the challenges in sort of telling the story, as Reverend Drummond has just laid out, there's so much here, and you could kind of get caught up in a lot of the detail of it. Sort of, what was your challenge in trying to tell this story? Because you had the two principals here, obviously the two people who really made this thing run. What did you find in terms of, you know, storytelling that you wanted to try and accomplish?
Well, actually, there's many difficulties in telling this story, because as Dr. Drummond will tell you, there's all these different schisms. And so though he and Ivan Stang are supposedly the leaders or the founders,
yes,
everybody runs their own show. So there was an Arkansas group and a San Francisco group, and there's a group in that I'll think of it a second. Anyway, he was out of Florida, and they're all doing their own spin on what this is supposed to be. And they're all claiming that theirs is the most important part of some genius, or, you know, the most vital part. And so it's just having all those different personalities and trying to get you can't ever get everyone in this, because there's so many people. There was a group in Brighton, London. There's a group in Australia. There was a group in Canada. I mean, they're really all over the world. And so one of the issues has been there's too much material to put in an hour and 20-minute movie, or under 2-hour movie. And so we had to break it down and try to come up with to explain what the church was, with many definitions that a lot of people have never heard of. They didn't know what a pink was or a normal. And then as you're trying to give certain definitions, the church is truly, the people that are interviewing are saying, well, that's their definition of the same word. And so you never really, I mean, they don't want to be defined. So that made it difficult. So I had to come up with a storyline that would not only explain their history, encompass as much of the church as I could, but also relate to our modern world. So this wouldn't just be a subgenius movie, and use it. So hopefully the church would not only tell their story, and we wanted to do what Doug asked, which is, you know, they're getting older, they're concerned that they would turn into a Scientology or Mormonism if the truth didn't finally come out. And there were too many people at the time that really wanted this to be a real cult. So that was an issue. And then also show how cults and cult practices are used in politics today. That gave it the world renowned, you know, information and connections. So people wouldn't, if they weren't even interested in subgenius, they could see how these guys that were really, I hate to say this, Dr. Drummond, but nobody from Dallas, Texas, turned this thing into a worldwide cult. Whether it's a joke or not, it still was a cult.
Right. Well, I thank you for saying that, because that is what the film is. It is a film that if you had, and I had no idea that the Church of the Subgenius existed until I saw the film. and so for me, it was such an enjoyable watch. And one of the things that I think the Reverend Drummond would echo this. And that is, this is a church, and I'm using air quotes here, church that promotes schisms, which and there's just so many things, the devival instead of a revival, all the things about it are intended, in my opinion, are intended to, like, flashing red lights to say, this is the part where you normally we would be talking to you about joining and getting your family to join. We're not here to do that. In fact, we're here to make sure your family doesn't join the church. And I mean, there's just so many things about it that are funny, satirical, and true. And I think that's the subgenius of what their philosophy is while all of these things on some level are a lot of fun, are also pointing out some hard truths about social norms.
That's true. And one of the things that I kept saying through the entire movie, not on screen, was, you know, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. How am I going to get the broader audience to be interested, watch this movie, and actually learn something once they walk away? You know, take something with them. And it's the guy's humor. I mean, they're hilarious. And a lot of these people, and they're actually, in fact, one of the subgenius just accused me of revealing that they are truly teddy bears, and that was not supposed to what was happening.
Well, you know, when you walk into this hornet's nest of terrible people, Sandy, this is what's going to happen. I want to remind our listeners that we're talking with the director, producer, and the writer of this wonderful film, J.R. Bob Dobbs and the Church of the Subgenius. And so this is important. And I'm going to ask Reverend Drummond here. I have to ask you this because I'm a comedy nut. I go way back with all this stuff. But were you guys influenced at all by Firesign Theater?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We were big Firesign Theater fans. One of the terms early on in the church, one of the terms that Reverend Stang and I developed was the term called macho irony. Mm-hmm. Is that we wanted this to be as ironic as it could be. Sometimes we would say the most blatant lies, but we try to do it with the straightest face possible. Right. Make them sound as true as they are. And people would say, I can't believe you can say that with a straight face. But, I mean, that was part of the whole thing, is that, you know, we really enjoyed the whole sense of irony and tried to put it into everything. And, you know, kind of like nowadays, nobody gets a joke anymore. It's sort of like we're in a post-irony period.
We are.
People don't even understand it anymore. You know, you get in trouble for joking around, saying the wrong things. It's real easy these days. You know, and those were the kind of things that we kind of filled our cart with back in the old days, you know. So it's... And part of that was, in that time, making fun of something and showing how ridiculous it was a good way to teach people about things. We did, over time, build a pretty large community of people that even today all communicate with each other. You know, there's probably 25 different Facebook groups where people are, you know, the Subgenius Film Society, the Subgenius Book Club, and mm-hmm. Subgenius Slack Hole, and all these different places that people gather in the name of Bob, and they do it. It's just part of their lives. And for some people, it really did fill that void, that sense of community that maybe in the past was filled by a church or some religious organization. Now is like, we can get all that same stuff that they used to offer, but we can get it from these guys, you know, this.
Yeah.
And we can sort of make up our own rules. and just be people. And so that's been kind of interesting as the community that has developed over time. And that, and Sandy said something about it earlier. It's not like we were afraid we're going to pass away tomorrow or anything, but there's a lot of people out there that up until, you know, I would say maybe a year or 2 years ago, they didn't know that Steve Wilcox and Philo Drummond was the same person because, you know, for 40 years, I never let my guard down. When I was Philo, you know, he had this little bit different personality than Steve does, you know. And I think that a lot of subgeniuses who chose their own subgenius name were ready to assume an identity that they felt inside for a long time, but didn't feel comfortable wearing it in public, you know.
I do want to go back to, because we were talking about the late 70s, early 80s is when the church began to form and come up with the sort of the iconography and sort of the, some of the broad outlines of the church. But you know, this is an era, and I'm going to go back and sort of betray my age here a little bit. But I mentioned Fire Sign Theater. There was the National Lampoon Radio Dinner Hour. There was a lot of humor around during that time that was ironic, that was sardonic, that had turned things on its head, took convention and really torqued it. Really made it weird, right? And I think of R. Crumb, you mentioned him earlier as some of these, there was that late 60s into the 70s, that sort of mindset. It was about anti-authoritarianism. It was about, you know, F the man, you know, he's not going to tell me. That's all that stuff. And over time, it got a little weird and a little misogynistic over time, but there was a real nice period there where it was genuinely funny, genuinely heartfelt. And I think, for me, that's what you embody in the film and in the whole, that you captured that sort of zeitgeist. Am I being fair to you and to the church?
Oh yeah, I think so. And I think that's what Sandy was, definitely picked that up in the film. And I don't know that we could have done it because we're just sort of too close to it, you know?
Yeah, I want to ask Sandy, we just got a couple more minutes. Sandy, you know, there's a lot of fun things about it, but one of the things about J.R. Bob Dobbs and the Church of the Subgenius, it was the finding the people who are fans, and Richard Linklater is in the film, Nick Offerman, Penn Jillette. There are a number of people that are cool people in the film. What was it like to go to them and hearing what they had to say about the church?
Well, there are so many, but we even contacted R. Crumb, but he was ill at the time and he could not do the interview. But there were several that were willing. And David Byrne was a big part of it. Jonathan Demme had passed. He was a part of it.
Pee Wee Herman, Paul Rubens.
Yes, that's right. They were all, but these were the guys that not only did Nick Offerman and also Devo, Jerry Casale. Yeah,
Jerry Casale
too, right? But those are the guys that interviewed were the ones that said, actually agreed to. I sent out many requests, you know, and saying who has time and who can do this, and the main thing, a lot of people, they brought up some issues about why did you have Rick Linklater? Well, the reason I had Rick is because he named his film Slacker. And it was all during the Subgenius unit that was going on in Austin in the early 80s. And I got him to admit that, yes, in Rick's way, well, yeah, it did come from the term slack or, you know, from the Subgenius. And that was a key point for selling this thing. You know, it was like, okay. And people were going, why Rick? And I'm going, well, you know, this is why. And then Nick Offerman, it was really, his story is amazing about living on a farm in this rural area. And when he didn't get any of the Subgenius until he had gone off to school. And then Penn Jillette was the same situation where his life was blown out of the water by this, and how this mentality and this humor, you know, affected his life and helped them to go beyond their, you know, visions of what they were brought up with in their childhood.
Thank you for bringing up Slack, because I meant to bring that up with Reverend Drummond. And I know you're adverse to trying to exactly define Slack, but I just like to hear your take for the uninitiated, for those of us who have not been members of the Subgenius Church. How would you describe to an outsider what Slack is?
Well, let me ask you a question. in your mind right now, what do you want Slack to be? That's okay. What it is. You got it. You got it. See, I put it right there in your mind, and you had your mind's eye, and you looked right at it.
Yeah, I did. I did. Well, that's amen, amen, Reverend, amen to you. I'm church today. I want to thank you for all of that. Well, it's been a blast. It's so much fun. The film is so much fun. It's called J.R. Bob Dobbs and the Church of the Subgenius. It is in virtual theaters. Actually, it's been in virtual theaters for a couple of weeks now. Tell us if we want to see this somewhere down the line, if we can see it now or if we can see it in the near future. Sandy K. Boone, how would we do that?
It's on Amazon, it's on Fandango, it's on iTunes, it's on Apple, and it's on Vudu right now.
It's on Amazon. Yeah. Oh, you said Amazon, okay.
Yeah, that's okay, no, and you can stream it. I'm never going to make my money back, but at least put some money in would be great.
is $9.99 worth changing your life for the better? Is it? I mean, is it
exactly? You know,
yes. It's cheaper than a membership.
That's right. That's true.
Well, if for
$35 will get you a membership.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
Can be your own.
Well,
you can start your own church then.
Thank you. They can go to subgeniusmovie.com. And Reverend Drummond, if they choose to want to join the church, how would they do that? Where would they go?
They go to subgenius.com
yeah.
And look for the link that says new members.